Welcome to the HR Room Podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR, where we talk to business leaders from around Ireland and share their advice on how to create the HR systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, simply visit www.insighthr.ie/podcast. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Okay, let's get started.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the HR Room Podcast. For the past couple of years, the focus for organizations everywhere has been on the pandemic, getting their companies and people out of the other side. I suppose within the background, there's been some significant change in the area of employment law, which is obviously a foundational topic for HR teams everywhere. So as we kick off the new year, we want to take a deeper look at some of the key employment law items for HR teams in 2022. So today we're delighted to be joined by someone with over 25 years experience in employment law and a familiar face to many of our listeners, Adrian Toomey, partner at Jacob & Toomey Solicitors. Thank you for joining us, Adrian. How are you?
I'm great, Owen. Thank you. And thanks very much for the invitation to join you. It's lovely to be here for the start of the new year.
It's delighted to have you. And of course, we're also joined by our very own Mary Cullen, founder and managing director here at Insight HR. Hi, Mary. How are you?
Great. How are you, Owen?
Brilliant. All good. All good. So look, we'll jump right in. We'll come to yourself first, Adrian. And I think the main question that we kind of want to kick off with, I suppose, can you tell us some of the key employment law changes that HR teams should look out for in 2022?
That's a big question, Owen, and involves maybe a little bit of crystal ball gazing. But after reviewing what happened in 2021 and looking at what might happen in 2022, it struck me that immediately COVID is going to have a significant impact. But then if you think about it a little deeper, and we'll come back to COVID, I'm sure, shortly with Mary. In terms of euros and cents, it strikes me that this year is a big year on the pay and benefits front from an employment law perspective. That's not an area that we normally highlight as being one in which employment law intervenes too much. But this year is a big year on that front because we've already had on the 1st of January a new national minimum wage. So the national minimum wage has gone up from 10.20 an hour to 10.50, which is going to be hopefully a benefit for low paid workers, but also a significant increase in cost for employers in particular sectors. And there are consequential increases for those who are under 18 and 19 years of age. So basic pay has increased at the bottom end of the scale. Secondary to that, then, we absolutely expect that there will be some form of statutory sick pay introduced over the course of 2022. It was promised last year. It didn't arrive. But you'd expect to see that being introduced this year. They say that initially employers are going to have to pay for up to 3 days of sick pay and sick leave per annum. And the proposed legislation, the bill that was published late in 2021, that provides for increases in that number of days by order of the minister. And the government has indicated that it intends to increase that number of days up to 10 over, I think, a two-year period. But the legislation permits further increases above and beyond that. And then the third significant development in terms of pay and benefits, perhaps a little further down the road, is the big looming specter of pensions auto-enrollment, which was supposed to be coming in this year, got shelved because of problems in relation to its implementation and objections from different quarters of the economy. But the government is saying that it's going to implement it in 2024, and from there on over a 10-year period, we'd expect some further details and announcements on auto-enrollment if it's going to happen during the course of 2022. So I think if COVID wasn't bad enough and Brexit added on top of it, in terms of employers, you've got a baseline increase in the cost of employing people between increased national minimum wage, now statutory sick pay, and very shortly pensions auto enrollment. So love to start the new year with a grim message. And unfortunately, there's one in perhaps a little longer form than I would have liked to give you.
It also means, doesn't it, that wages generally will be on the rise, because once you see the national minimum wage rise, there tends to be that push again for higher salaries all round. It doesn't just stop with minimum wage workers.
You're absolutely right, Mary. And at the same time, it's interesting to note that HR professionals are suggesting, I think it was a survey that I saw published by yourselves recently, that the war for talent and attracting and retaining high quality staff is going to be their biggest issue over the course of the coming year. And that always means pressure on salaries to increase.
Yeah, I think looking back at, I suppose, as we kind of mentioned COVID at the start of the discussion, kind of looking back to last year, I suppose everything was a little bit tricky over the past couple of years, I think, in for every area within HR and what was related to it. I suppose, Adrian, were there any kind of big, and kind of devil's advocate here, were there any kind of big mistakes you saw kind of made by HR in the area of employment over the past couple of years? Anything that was kind of missed that shouldn't have been?
Well, I suppose I tend to get asked that question on a regular basis. It's almost an annual question, and every year, smaller employers make the same mistakes, and I could give the same answer every year for the past 20 years, but I'll try to be a little different, right? And not say failing to follow your own policies or failing to have a grievance or disciplinary policy and procedure. I suppose the biggest one that I saw in 2021 was in relation to redundancy, okay? Because over the course of the last 2 years with COVID, obviously, lots of companies have had to implement redundancies. There might be a war for talent out there, but there was also a significant number of jobs lost during COVID. Unfortunately, we've rebounded and recovered really well from that. But in terms of implementing redundancies, there's a tendency sometimes by employers to think about whether or not they need to implement redundancies and whether or not they can justify those redundancies, but to forget about the communication process that's necessitated when redundancies are being implemented, because you need to sit down and talk to employees and tell them what's happening, what's proposed, why it's proposed, how it might happen, get their thoughts on the problem and the process, and keep open the option of implementing suggestions that they might have that could reduce the need for redundancies or delay the need for redundancies or reduce the number of redundancies. So it's always very important that employers take appropriate advice before they implement redundancies. And I'm not trying to just sell the services of solicitors here. There are a number of others who will assist employers. And I know that you've worked yourselves with a number of your clients in terms of helping them through that communication process, which is vitally important from a legal perspective. So that's the big one that hit me in 2021. Other issues, just to touch on them briefly, GDPR seems to be becoming a bigger and bigger problem for HR. You know, we're all so used to communicating via email, WhatsApp, different platforms, that we're putting things in writing and in permanent form that include personal data, which can later be accessed when people make a data subject access request. And I've seen that problem arising for HR regularly over the last year or two, and I think it's going to become more and more significant. So we need to be careful that we're not disclosing personal data for previously undisclosed purposes, and without an appropriate legal basis for doing so. And then the last problem that really jumped out at me on a regular basis in 2021 with smaller employers, this is a problem that, you know, does happen year in, year out, is in relation to record keeping. The WRC inspectorate, the former NERA, are turning up on people's doorsteps, even though COVID may still be raging, and they are looking for records, and employers' record keeping, I think, in some places has slipped a little and been made more difficult by the pandemic and people working remotely.
Can I ask you, Adrian, are the WRC inspections taking place remotely, or are they literally coming unannounced to premises?
I've seen both. So I've seen requests from them that employers email in copy records for inspection, but I've also seen inspectors turning up on the doorstep, literally physically, as they would normally. So that's certainly happening. And of course, where employers have had difficult periods with staff members out sick or self-isolating, including staff in HR, and people working remotely and not there on a day-to-day basis to fill out their timesheet, record keeping is becoming even more haphazard than normal. And there doesn't seem to be an awful lot of leeway being given to employers by the WRC in that context.
I think kind of similar to Adrian's previous point there, I'll come to yourself for this one, Mary. I suppose, how can HR teams kind of prevent these issues from arising in the first place? It's a lot of what we talk about, to prevent these things from happening before they get to grievance or WRC or something like that.
Yeah, well, knowledge is power, isn't it? So being aware of what's happening out there is so important. So I would say to any HR practitioner that as part of the role, it's important to keep an eye on case law, keep an eye on developments in employment legislation, listen to people like Adrian, who will be talking about and writing about developments and things that happen. And it's really about keeping yourself informed. You are that, in many cases, from an operational perspective, you are responsible for the policies and procedures of the organization. And so in order to keep them up to speed, you really do have to be aware about what's going on. I know we've looked at various policies and procedures for clients of ours, and some of them are extremely old and have been updated in a long time. And it's something I would recommend that from a HR department or HR function perspective, that you're pulling them out every year and thinking, what's changed? Has there been any significant change in the law? Is there anything that I'm hearing about that needs to go into these? Do I need someone to look at them? You know, where are we at with them? Because you fall back on them and you rely on them when there's trouble, whether that's from a redundancy perspective, a record keeping perspective, you know, dismissal perspective, whatever, you're going to have to rely on those policies and procedures, and having them accurate in the first place is just so important.
And if I could follow up on that, I think that's an area in which it's important for, if I can call them in-house HR professionals, to have a touchstone outside of their organization. I can think of numerous examples of HR professionals with whom I work on a regular basis who have been with their companies for a very long time. And if you've been in an organization for 10, 15, or 20 years, over that time, your knowledge of the organization becomes incredibly deep. But you also tend to see increasingly that organization's reaction to issues as being the norm. And you don't have exposure to what other companies are doing. And so I think it's very useful. And this is, again, I'm not trying to advertise. It's very useful to have an external HR consultant or an employment lawyer or both who you can pick up the phone to and just ring and say, okay, I just want to talk to you for 2 minutes. We're updating our policy on this. This is what we're going to do. Does that reflect what other people are doing, or are we way off beam? Because I have found that there are good companies with really good HR professionals who've been there a long time, and they'll ring you up and they'll say, this is what our policy says. We're thinking of tweaking it to say this. What do you think? And you kind of go, well, that's 10 years behind what other people are doing. You need to consider X, Y, or Z. That's a 2-minute phone call. It might cost 10 or 20 or 30 euro, but so much better to catch up with what's happening elsewhere. So sorry, didn't mean to run what might have sounded like an ad there, but it doesn't have to be a service that you pay for. It might be somebody who's a friend of yours who works elsewhere in a consultancy firm, whatever. You need to have an external touchstone.
Especially in times of change like this as well, when there's lots of new issues, I suppose, even with the whole hybrid model as well. And that kind of leads on to my next question, I suppose, Adrian. Like, has the hybrid environment kind of posed any new challenges for HR in relation to employment law? Is there anything that's cropped up that people need more assistance as we go through change, but is there anything in particular that might have been a challenge that wasn't before?
Yeah, I think on a practical level, having eyes on people is an issue in some organizations. I know you hear lots of reports and interviews where politicians in particular are saying, you know, that there's actually an upside to all of this in that people are now having access to flexible working, remote working, working from home, blah, blah, blah. I've heard a lot of stuff from Leo Varadkar in particular on that point, spinning the upside. But that means that it's harder for employers to monitor performance in many cases. It's harder for them to encourage teamwork and to facilitate teamwork, regardless of the wide variety of IT facilities or platforms that might be available to us now. It is still harder to work in teams if you're not going to gather around a table over a cup of coffee with a whiteboard on which you can scroll down ideas. It's harder to monitor working hours. I find now that I finish work in the evening at, let's say, 7 o'clock, head home. And in the past, I might have come back into one email in the morning. Now I'm coming back into dozens of emails in the morning. And some of them are coming from women who are juggling ridiculous workloads, as well as home and family responsibilities and homeschooling children. And I kind of wonder, do these ladies ever get a chance to actually sleep? And I don't mean to be sexist. I'm saying that women are carrying a greater burden than men. I find an awful lot more of those emails that arrive overnight are coming from female clients than from male clients. And you see people who are working at 11 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock at night, 1 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning, or 5, 5.30, 6 a.m. And I, from an employer's perspective or an employment lawyer's perspective, I just wonder, are those people getting the statutorily required 11-hour break between their working days? Are they getting the necessary downtime? It's all very well and good to talk about flexible working and to say that this is great, that people can fit work around their family-related responsibilities. I don't think they can, whilst at the same time respecting the legal principles enshrined in the Working Time Directive and the Organization of Working Time Act very easily. So that's a very visible problem. I think there are problems in relation to GDPR again, because if people are working from home, if they're printing documents or even accessing documents, I mean, if I'm working from home and I'm looking at a letter that I'm drafting, calling an employee to a disciplinary hearing, for doing something outrageous, and the baby starts crying and I have to attend to that, or the child who's doing his or her homework at the kitchen table has spilled the kettle all over themselves and I have to attend to that, who's looking at my screen? Is somebody else looking at my screen at that time? We've got GDPR issues. So there's lots of issues arising there. The government promised this year to promote a right to disconnect, and they introduced a code of practice, which largely just summarized what the law already was, so I wasn't overly impressed with that, but they're promising now a statutory right to request remote working. And I know that certain employers are looking at that kind of going, you must be joking. Because what it'll probably involve, if we get the legislation in 2022, which we should do, it was promised in 21, so it should come in 22, that'll probably say that employees have a right to ask for remote working. Employers don't have to grant it, but they do have to reasonably consider it. And they must have objective reasons if they refuse it. And people are going to be bringing claims about that inevitably. And it's just another layer of confusion and problem that's being layered on by legislation. Sorry, I lathered on too long there, Owen.
I think it kind of showcases how much there is and how many considerations there has to be, really, doesn't it? I suppose there's so many different topics. I think for kind of similar to what Adrian was saying there, Mary, I know we operate a helpline for employers as many other similar companies do. Can you give us a flavor, I suppose, what were the most common concerns that we heard from the market last year?
I can echo quite a bit of what Adrian has said there, in that, I mean, we've had calls from our clients concerned about performance. You know, is somebody actually doing their job? Someone's not contactable. They're constantly unavailable, or they're working their hours at strange times that don't actually suit the business. So to Adrian's point, if somebody's logging on at 5:30 in the morning and they're doing 5 or 6 hours of work and they're gone by 11 a.m., you know, have we checked that they've had their breaks? Does it actually work for the business? You know, are they able to perform their job fully in that time? Do they not need to interact with anybody else? So I think a lot depends on the actual working arrangements that, you know, an organization is going to put in place, and not forgetting that they're still obliged to look after people's health and well-being, their physical safety, their, you know, hours of work, and ensuring that they're taking those statutory rest breaks, and ensuring that, you know, the arrangement that they have in place is suitable to home working. So if you're sitting at your kitchen table and the entire family is in and out, or your housemates, whatever it might be, and you're in a sensitive role like HR, where you might actually be, as Adrian says, working on, you know, a confidential kind of a document, who else might have access to it? Where are you leaving your papers? How are you storing them if you're printing them? You know, all of those things have to be worked out. The larger the organization, in theory, the better they have planned this. But in practice, to be honest, from what I see out there, organizations of all sizes are struggling with, you know, what their employees are actually doing during the workday. And in some ways, the idea, you know, well, we have an allowance that we give them to look after their home working environment. Well, do we know, have they bought a desk or a chair, that they're in a suitable location? Lots and lots of organizations are just not doing those simple checks. I saw recently, Adrian, I think it was a German case, where someone fell, I think, going from their bed to their laptop or desk in their bedroom, and actually litigated against their employer. How likely is any of that stuff going to be for, you know, in an Irish setting? We tend to be a reasonably litigious bunch.
Oh, I think if you can dream up a case, you'll find that it is being brought at present up and down the country, to be perfectly honest with you, Mary. Yeah, it's inevitable that we're going to see cases like that. I do think that the courts have been a little more careful in the last year or two in terms of addressing personal injuries types of cases. There's been a couple of significant judgments where they've basically said no. There was one recently, for example, where a number of individuals sued a local authority after they fell off a children's swing at a playground. And the judge said, listen, the swing was designed for children, not for adults. It's not surprising that you might have suffered an ankle injury trying to get off a swing that was so low to the ground as to facilitate a child. No, you're not getting anything in terms of compensation. And I heard that judgment being criticized roundly on an RTE radio show, well-known afternoon radio show. And I have to say, I was cheering the judge, as I would with a court throwing out that German claim, Mary. But yes, absolutely. This crazy litigation going on up and down the country on all of these issues. And I think the one thing that's certain is if you can dream up an excuse for blaming somebody else for something that's happened to you and look for compensation, you will find people who will bring those cases for you. And I don't mean to criticize members of my own profession. We all have to make a buck, but yeah, maybe I should stop there before I get myself in trouble.
Yeah, we try not to get you in trouble here, Adrian.
Thanks, Mary.
And I suppose the big challenge really for HR teams kind of bringing it back to your own audience is how do you keep on top of it really? When there is so much, like we could speak for, I think, 2 or 3 hours on this, Adrian, to be honest, because there is so many issues.
I suppose the crazy thing is it's impossible, Owen.
That's it.
Yeah, yeah. That's going to keep all of us in work for the next few years. It's impossible to comply with everything all of the time.
I think that's the kind of key thing. And I suppose so, like, to kind of give an attempt to I suppose guide people through it and guide HR teams, where can they start? I suppose where can they go for support? Nobody's going to know everything, but where can they go for guidance and support to at least I suppose give them peace of mind? I suppose I'll come to yourself for that first, Mary.
To us, obviously, Owen and Adrian, that's a facetious answer to that question. But, you know, it's really to, there are some great organizations out there, you know, and I would recommend that, you know, wherever you're getting your advice and support, one, you're making sure that it's a reputable company and that they actually know what they're talking about, and that you're getting reliable information. Google is a great thing, but, you know, you would be stunned at how many UK policies I've looked at for Irish companies when the legislation isn't the same, or the maybe statutory rights are different, or, you know, there can be something that's just wrong in the Irish context. So my advice would be, wherever you go, whether it's a HR provider, an employment lawyer, your national association, make sure that you're getting the best advice you can. In real terms, you know, what do you want when you're looking for advice? You want someone not just to quote the law back at you. You want to know what you can do and how you can do it in the safest way possible for your organization. And for many organizations, that means that they sometimes take commercial decisions, but they need to be guided very carefully through that. And, you know, Adrian, we've worked with you plenty in the past, and we always trust the advice that we get from you. And I would always say that it's always worth having a good employment lawyer in the background, someone where you can go when you have a question or you're dealing with a significant issue, because an hour of someone's time like Adrian's can save you a hell of a lot of money at a later stage. And again, like Adrian, I'm not advertising either your services or ours, but I'm just trying to make clear that sometimes you're minding the pennies and at the end of the day you end up getting a slap or spending a hell of a lot more money than you ever intended to trying to defend a claim.
Yeah, I might chime in there, Owen, if that's okay. I think it's important that you carefully consider where you're getting your advice. And I think everything that Mary said there is absolutely spot on. Google is wonderful. And employment lawyers and HR consultants use Google as well, like everybody else. But you have to be so, so careful about what you get. And social media as well. Social media is a source of information, but it's also a completely unreliable source of information. So you'll find updates on employment law or HR, a variety of other things on LinkedIn, on Twitter, even on TikTok. This morning I got a call from a client wondering if something they'd seen on TikTok was accurate. And I suppose my answer generally is, if you can fit it in a Twitter post or you can fit it in the length of a TikTok video, it's not a comprehensive answer. And you need to be careful about who you're taking your advice from. So if you've been dealing with somebody like Mary or Liam at Insight HR over the course of 5 years and they've never put you wrong, you can be fairly certain that the 5 minute phone call you have with them will give you good, reliable advice. And in the same way, I can think of 20, 25, 30 employment lawyers off the top of my head who are top class, absolutely reliable. And while their hourly rates might sound expensive, it's not expensive for a 5 or a 10 minute phone call every so often when it could save you thousands on a case that you get stuck into unnecessarily. So just make sure that you're careful about who you're getting your advice from. You'll see services being advertised in magazines, on the internet, et cetera. You'll ring up and you will get somebody who's sitting in a call center reading from a manual. That's not the person to get your advice from. You need to get your advice from somebody who's properly qualified, has a reasonable degree of experience, and who you know you can trust.
Isn't the last thing you want to do is get this wrong, isn't it?
Yeah, and also, don't you want to go to people that you know by name, who knows your business too, who, you know, has a vested interest in looking after you well, and wants to make sure that you're doing the very best thing for your organization. And that does, with it comes someone who's got experience and knowledge, who knows what they're doing, who understands the law, understands the application of the law, understands the consequences of getting this wrong, but also understands business. And, you know, if you're newly out of college, working in some of these call centers, which, you know, obviously I'm not going to name any of them, but you're newly out of college, it can be very difficult for you to have the level and depth of experience to guide and advise people on tricky situations. So where the source of your information is incredibly important. If you're somebody who likes to read, there's lots of information out there on, you know, established businesses' websites. You know, when I look for updates on employment law, I'm happy to go to one of Adrian Toomey's posts, because I know if I read it, I'm not going to go wrong in terms of what I've read. Is it enough for me to make informed decisions? If I have enough experience, yes, potentially. Would a further discussion with Adrian be valuable? Yes, absolutely. If it's something important, should I do that? I would always recommend that you do. So I think it's really buyer beware. Be careful what you're signing up to. Be careful where you're getting your information from. Like I say, TikTok. I mean, do we give advice? Do we get advice on TikTok? I haven't seen it yet, but maybe that is happening now. And we might need to move with the times, Adrian. Next thing, you and I will be doing dances on TikTok and guiding people that way.
You'll be waiting a long time before you see me dancing on TikTok, I'm afraid, Mary.
Likewise, Adrian.
Yeah, but the advice that you're giving is good. It's the same thing. If I'm feeling sick, I can go on WebMD or any one of a host of websites, and I can self-diagnose myself, or I can get medical advice. And it may be right, it may be wrong. It's probably not the best medical advice. I'm still better advised to go to my doctor. If I need tax or accountancy advice, I will research options on the internet, but then I will go and see my accountant who has worked with me for the last 15 years and who I know I can trust. And I'll say, listen, PJ, I saw the following five ideas on the internet. What do you think of them? And he'll very quickly go, 1, 2, 3, and 4 are rubbish. There might be something in number five. And we can explore that further. But 10 minutes with him is worth 3 days on the internet.
Yes, well, after the past couple of years for HR people in particular, we talk a lot about how pressurized it's been. There's been many challenges trying to do just HR as a profession. There's so many things to kind of be on top of. So with something like this, obviously you don't want to get it wrong. So don't be afraid to reach out for support and that kind of thing. So definitely some very solid messages there for our listeners. So thank you very much, Mary and Adrian, for a very insightful discussion. I think that was very practical. I think it'll hopefully help people along the way with tackling some of the key employment law issues for this year and beyond. Thank you to everyone for listening. We'll catch you next week for the next installment of our podcast. So don't forget to click subscribe and join the discussion on our social media channels. And as always, for HR consultancy services and management you can trust and HR employment law advice, get in touch with us today at insighthr.ie. Thank you, Adrian. Thank you, Mary.
Thanks, Owen.
Thank you, Owen.
Thanks for joining us today on the HR Room podcast, the podcast series from Insight HR that helps you create the human resources systems and workplace culture that's right for your business. For show notes and bonus content, go to www.insighthr.ie/podcast. That's www.insighthr.ie/podcast. We'd love it if you subscribe, like, and share the show with any friends and colleagues who are looking for fresh ideas on how to create the ideal workplace for their business. And remember, if you need any HR support, get in touch with us at Insight HR. Whether it's conducting a complex workplace investigation, filling a gap by providing you with a virtual or an on-site HR resource, or providing advice via our HR support line, we'll help you resolve whatever human resources challenge your business is facing. Thanks, and see you soon.